You're walking along the side of the road, not sure how long you've been out there, or you're not even sure what road you're on. You hear a sound coming, like a car engine. It sounds familiar. And it's your car. Lost so many months ago in the wild, unpaved blacktop of memory. Surely that car has been eaten by a wild pelican or a starving alligator long, long ago. But no, you see it. Turns a corner and comes into view. It's your car. And God, what are your friends behind the wheel? It's Dijon, your partner. Man, he's got the best stories. His wife's always cheating on him. He's got the fattest donkey in three parishes. Man, Dijon's been to the moon, and he's outwitted Le Diable himself. Now, we both know he's full of it. He's a couillon. But he's one of the most interesting residents of Outlandish Parish. So look, I know today that we're talking about the fool. We're talking about the couillon. We're talking about this character in Cajun lore and Cajun stories and definitely in Cajun culture. But the idea of a couillon as a person who is foolish, but maybe for reasons they don't know, I always think of this thing that I watched. It was on PBS, and I don't really remember what year it was. I just know that I was pregnant for one of my kids. So it was sometime between 2013 and 2014.
With a four-year gap in between those somewhere. Yeah.
Well, my boys were 18 months apart, so that was kind of we hadn't really gotten our sleep cycle yet from the first one before we had the second one.
Oh,
the second
goodness.
Boy. So I don't remember what year, but it was like 2014, 2015.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, it was these shrimpers. You know, we were still dealing with the aftermath of the BP oil spill to some degree. It had only been like 4 or 5 years before.
Right. That was 2010. Yeah.
That was the year my daughter was born. Ah. And so whenever they were talking about, they were coming down and talking to shrimpers and stuff, because it really did have a huge upheaval on the fishing industry locally and the aquatic habitat locally.
Absolutely. As an aside, that's the year I actually left Louisiana. I was in the seafood industry working at Big Owl Seafood, and I ended up leaving to Austin, Texas to open a Cajun restaurant over there. That never happened, but at the same time, I met my current writing partner. So still, still upholding that Cajun tradition in a way, but in a different way than I planned to. But it definitely upheaved a lot of things. Like, I had a cousin who was in the, or I still have a cousin who was in the shrimping industry at the time. And he went from shrimping to renting his boat out to BP to, to clean up the mess.
It was a big thing, but there were a lot of like, PBS is, like public broadcasting and stuff. And so they have a lot of, I guess, kind of like humanitarian documentaries. And they had this shrimper who was talking to this ecologist from way up north. Like, he was definitely from like north of I-10. I keep saying Pennsylvania, but it was like something like that. Like it had his little notes underneath, like so-and-so doctor of marine biology from someplace nowhere near a coast. Mm-hmm. And the Cajun man and the biologist are talking. And the biologist has got this voiceover, and he says, "I just knew that we were in for a difficult time with these shrimpers, because I was speaking to this man, and I asked him if he knew where shrimp eggs came from. And he said, well, of course. He said, you see those big mosquitoes?" And they were talking about, my friend called them galley nappers, and I just love the name for that. But like the mosquito hawks, right? The big, big ones that have been down here in droves the last couple of weeks. They show up around the same time as shrimp season in the spring. Yeah. And he says that man told me that they carry, those big mosquito hawks carry the eggs on their legs, and then when they go through the water, it drops the eggs in the water, and that's where the baby shrimp come from. And I just knew that with that level of ignorance that we were just had a lot of education to do with these Cajun shrimpermen. And I had like, it's one of those moments, like all alone in my house, I have my hand over my mouth and I'm just watching the TV like, oh no, you didn't, because I got it, right? And you probably get it too without thinking it.
That he was Cajun, just messing with him.
He was just messing with some dude who you know, the Cajun man probably figured this guy had never seen a shrimp boat in his life.
Right.
And so he's doing that thing, right? All of our uncles did this to us.
Oh, messing with you.
Definitely did it. And it's not just messing with somebody. It's messing with somebody in a way that makes you look stupid until that person realizes that you're pulling it over.
Right.
It's such an on-point aspect of Cajun culture that is really hard to explain to people.
It is.
That me sitting there and making you think I'm a couillon, and then you realizing that you're the couillon for believing that I'm the couillon. And that to me is like just where that quintessential Cajun humor that is something that's not unique, but it's definitely where a lot of Cajun culture comes down. And sometimes we miss the translation, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, because a lot of the Cajun culture has always been cut off from society. So they know what's going on within that small ecosystem. And just to be able to pull one over on somebody else, just to be like, yeah, this is just, it's kind of ambiguous to what's true and what's not. But at the same time, yeah, it's a self-aware joke.
It's just,
I was watching
this. I was like, he doesn't get the joke. He doesn't get the joke. And what kills me is that a lot of times, especially with things like this, like because he doesn't get the joke, the way that Cajun people are portrayed, because they're not in on it, right? They're not in on it. So they think we're idiots.
Right.
Even though we're sitting here like, nah, man, we're smart as hell. Y'all are idiots for thinking we're idiots. And it turns into like a comedy of errors.
Well, it definitely takes a certain sense of like a sense of intelligence or even wisdom to be able to live just off the land the way that a lot of Cajuns have done throughout the years, just throughout our life as Cajuns. It's a connection that's, yeah, it's hard to explain even now.
No, because it's wisdom. It's, you know, you chose the right word. It's not necessarily knowledge is only going to get you so far, right? Mm-hmm. Knowing that a marsh is an unreliable landscape isn't going to tell you which patches of grass have enough dirt underneath them that if you've got to get off your boat, that's a safe place to put your boat. You know, you
Very
can have
well
knowledge,
said. Yes.
But you need that wisdom. And the idea of the fool, the idea of the silly person, the idea of the couillon in Cajun culture is so strong. You've got stories about having your own mud boat at 11 or even young, what, 9?
Right. Something like that. I don't really remember the age, but it was pretty young. Yeah.
It's one of those things that when you start learning it from so little that of course it's not a knowledge base. It's something that you know in your bones. The Cajun sense of humor, because we're such a goofy people. I mean, we really are. We don't hide from the silliness of the fact that you have to wear the white boots. The white boots look silly out of context.
The Cocodrie Reeboks or whatever you call them. Yeah.
You have to wear the hip waders. Hip waders look utterly ridiculous out of context. You have to be willing to be sweaty and gross and nasty living down here. Mm-hmm. And that's just part of the life. There's so much mud, you're going to get some on you. So you can't be judgmental about it.
You can't beat a funchak.
No. And look, couillon and funchak, me and mama were talking about it. She goes, oh, that's two different things.
Well, for sure.
A couillon knew he's a couillon. Funchak, they might not know they funchak. And I guess she probably defined what that is.
Right. Yeah, for those of you who don't know what a couillon and a funchak is.
Okay, so a couillon, what's a couillon to you? Like describe, you know you have friends who are couillons.
Oh, for sure.
Friends who are couillons.
Yeah, so couillon for me is kind of just like a silly person who is either for the sake of just being that silly person or for the sake of not knowing they're a silly person or just go about doing either over-the-top things or things that are questionable at best. And I don't know how you would elaborate
Jackass
on that.
Jackass would be couillon.
That's
Jackass
a good word. Yeah, yeah.
Would be couillon. Not as a concept, but like that whole frickin' Johnny Knoxville crew that got to be so popular when we were younger. Like, that's some couillons.
They some couillons.
If you watch them, I guess when they're in recovery, they're actually mostly pretty smart guys when they're like sober and present.
Right.
But then let's go out and run a four-wheeler over a ski ramp. That's some couillon, right?
That's some couillon.
But then funchak, and fon means like, I think it literally means like masculine genital part forward. Like, I really think it's just like a chalk is a, at least.
I thought a chalk was that, and then a fon was a butt.
Yeah, but then like a butt. Like, think about what...
I don't know. It sounds funny to me.
It sounds funny, but like, it definitely leading with the groin area.
Yeah.
Sort of. Right. Like, Funchak is fancy. I say that people from places with sidewalks are Funchak.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
Funchak is like showing off.
I thought anybody from up the bayou was a Funchak whenever I was a kid. You know,
they
anybody.
Have sidewalks.
They have sidewalks up the bayou. You don't have that down the bayou. That would sink in the marsh. You crazy.
There's like one little piece of Golden Meadow that has a sidewalk right in front of the middle school that used to be the high school. But yeah, Funchak is like showing off and being like kind of arrogant. And the Couillon is never arrogant. The Couillon is always a very grounded individual.
Oh, maybe not, you know, grounded, but...
Well...
yeah.
If he's braggadocious,
right,
it's from a point of ignorance.
Yeah, yeah.
The idea of the Couillon, the idea of the fool, the idea of the silly person, it's a very present thing down here because, tragically, the way that ignorance is so tied to the cultural identity of being Cajun, and it has been, you know, I didn't go to school me. Like, there's this joke they say all the time that the little French boys, right, little French kid children were going to school, the new English school, right? They all going to be fancy. They're going to be Funchak. They're going to go to the school and learn them some English so they can leave the bayou and go be successful. Hey, about 20 minutes later, all the little children start coming back. And the mama says, "Mate, why you? I sent y'all to school to do some learning. Why you came back?" He says, "Me mama, we stood up in front of the class and they said we're going to learn our numbers. And the teacher said, say one. So we all said one. And then the teacher says, say two. And so we came home because say two means that's it. Like, say two means that's all that's like, say two, C-E-S-T-T-O-U-T en français means that's it.
That's
like,
it.
That's all, folks. Okay, so everybody came home.
That's so, I've never heard that. That is funny.
Those jokes like that, that's sort of, especially whenever you get to like the English-French transitions, you get some very funny plays like downplaying education. You get some really funny jokes and stories like about that they went to school and they learned so much, and the dog learns how to talk and he's like, oh, don't tell him what was on the test paper and stuff like that. You see these jokes that are definitely grounded in a French tradition. There's a character called Jean Sott that is like an older French tradition story that you'll see some of these jokes going back like hundreds of years. If you look at just the way that character, Jean Sott, Jean Le Sott, is kind of a Boudreaux and Thibodeau precursor, honestly. Mm-hmm. If you look at like the stories that go from France into Cajun culture, there's a little bit of a transition. And if anybody wants to get like super nerdy on this, I'll have a link in the show notes for Nathan Rabelais' thesis. He covers it beautifully and in-depth, and he talks about that transition from the French stories to the Cajun stories. Same thing with like kind of some of the African diaspora stories, like the trickster characters and stuff. He covers them really well. And I've read his book probably three times back-to-back at this point. But he talks about stories where Jean Sott, it's the little boy, and his mama, they need some money, right? They need some money, so the mama gives him a big old crock of butter, and she sends him to the store to sell the butter. Well, he's walking down the road, and he sees the road. It's so cracked. It's all dry. It's got these big crevices in it. He feels so sad for the road that he takes the butter, and he rubs it in the cracked road so it can feel better. And then his mama kicks his butt because he couldn't sell the butter. You know, it's stories like that that are old European tradition stories. A few of them did jump the pond. And when they did, especially in Cajun culture, they have that character in it, right? Like Foolish John or something becomes Jean Sott. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of all over the older collections from the oral traditions in Cajun culture. And then they eventually evolved into what like we know now as those sort of like Boudreaux and Thibodeau jokes and the Pascal tales around rain and stuff, which the Pascal tales are crazy. That's the ones that are really like, oh, and then he went like a Forrest Gump story. You know, he starts off and he's got to build him a boat, and he's got to go get the cow to put on the boat, to eat the hay, to make the manure, to burn the thing. And the next thing you know, they're going to the moon. It gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And those are kind of fool stories out of rain, but that one has a different name. That one's, those are the Pascal stories. And they're these like,
okay,
they're almost comedy bits. That's definitely a Prairie Cajun thing that I've read about. But it's almost like a sport. Like these men come together and they try to like outdo each other with these like crazy, crazy tall tales. There's a pretty good section of them in Swapping Stories, the Folklife collection that I'm always talking about.
Yeah, I have that book. I need to dive into it further, but yeah.
You can read it back and forth. There's a whole chapter that's just on the Pascal tales. But you see in all of these characters and in all of these stories, you see that sort of the Jack that we know from Jack and the Beanstalk, right? The Jack that we know from the German and Grimm tradition. Maybe you've seen or heard the boy who learned fear, right? The little boy who goes out. He wants to learn how to be afraid. And so he goes and he stays in this castle overnight. Remember the Shelley Duvall fairy tale series? Yeah, they did one of that. And it's a really good version of it. He's too stupid to be afraid. So like the monsters fall down from the ceiling. There's skeleton heads that come and play bowling. There's evil cats that scream and howl all night. And the whole time he's like, okay, whatever. And so because he's not smart enough to be afraid, he winds up winning the day and spending the night and getting the princess and getting the castle now that all the ghosts are banished. Typical fairy tale stuff. But I think you'll find it's not a difficult line to trace those fool stories all the way through to our Jean Stott stories and our Petite Jean stories and the Cajun tradition stories that made it across to Acadie and then down to Louisiana. And you see that fool character, that silly character, stayed in the culture in a way that a lot of the other characters didn't.
Hmm.
If you took all the old, like what we think of as like the Grimm style fairy tales, most of the ones that translated were in this sort of like the fool, foolish Jean, petite poussée. You know, they stayed in those stories where we don't really have like Goldilocks. We don't really have like Cinderella stories. But we do have this fool character that definitely translated into the Acadian culture.
I wonder why that is, too. Because, I mean, I feel like it's because maybe the landscape is so surprising at times that, you know, the fool is usually the first or last card in a tarot deck, right? Is it always a fool in the sense of always discovering new things, right? Maybe? Or always trying to realize what you're seeing? I don't know what it is. What do you think?
I don't know. I think that's an interesting point. Like, did the fool stick to Cajun culture because we've had to keep that sort of concept of discovery because we are a people who've gone from land to land to land for all that we've stayed pretty damn close to the coast? Right. The desert Cajuns haven't really evolved as a thing. Like,
yeah, I don't know any desert Cajuns. Actually.
If any desert Cajuns, shout out. Let us know you're out there, man. Know.
We love you.
How are you adapting? Do you have a water tank on your back at all times?
Yeah. Oh, your toes still webbed. Sorry. Yeah. Anyway, ours are
definitely. But we tend to stay close to the coast, but the Cajuns, for all that, if you look like through the coastal French, through Acadie, down to Louisiana, that's very different environments. That's very different places to be. That's very different neighbors to have, people to interact with. Those are very different worlds. And maybe that it's that sort of aspect of the French and the Acadian specifically, that sort of spirit of like, not innocence, but stranger in a strange land, you know, where we've been the new people so many times that like, okay, don't mess with us. We just here, we fun. And we have to explore and learn new things.
Yeah.
And that doesn't really lend itself to Cinderella stories. Don't explore in Cinderella. You're going to wind up putting your whole kingdom to sleep. But, you know, for the fool, that aspect of exploration and innocent openness is definitely something that sticks with it. We've had a lot of fun with it as a culture, you know, because we've wound up with things like the Boudreaux and Thibodeau jokes, and we've wound up with this sense of humor. I guess you're friends with DJ Rhett?
Yeah. Yeah, I grew up with those guys.
I mean, he's a DJ. Like,
he used to be, yeah, for sure. I mean, he still is really into music, like, but yeah, he got that name, I think, self-proclaimed DJ Rhett, because he's always been a DJ for, like, school events and weddings and all that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so he's like probably 4 years older than me, but I was always friends with his youngest brother, Benji, and his middle brother, Cody. Yeah, and they're all just fun-loving guys like that.
But he's a couillon.
He's a couillon, for sure. Totally, he is a couillon. They're all couillons in a good way, though. Like, I love those guys, for sure. I saw them whenever I went down.
But that sort of entertainer aspect, like that character, we don't have people who are, I guess I would almost say, like cultural ambassadors that are really serious. The Cajun people that have been elevated, because DJ Rhett has followers all over the world.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, dude, he's got like a million
his videos, y'all. If you go check out his videos, they're so funny.
He's got the Cajun word of the day. He always does.
He does Cajun word of the day. My favorite are whenever he talks about the marching bands in Mardi Gras, like public school versus private school marching bands.
Yes, indeed.
I was rolling.
Yeah, dude can dance too. Yeah, so he can portray these very well.
His twerk skills are on legendary. Yeah, if anybody out there gets a chance, look up DJ Rhett, R-H-E-T-T, or we'll put a link in the show notes. That's a prime couillon if you want an example.
Follow him if you want some entertainment.
But it's him. It's not Spud McConnell, who is another entertainer that I love. He's been a commentator on WWL for years. He played, I guess the biggest he got as far as global distribution, he's the guy who yells and stay out of the Woolworths and oh brother where art thou. He kind of looks like John Goodman, like he swept whenever they did the Kingfisher. He plays Earl and Huey Long quite a bit, but he's a very beautiful traditional actor. He's from New Orleans, but he's played a lot of Cajun characters and well, but he tends to play the more serious actors. This guy's personality hasn't gone, his seriousness hasn't really reached the masses, you know, the people who are trying to be the couillons are raised up high, and then the people who try to take it a little more seriously and try to deal with Cajun culture, it's almost like it's dismissed.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, what's the most famous Cajun movie you can think of?
Waterboy. No hesitation.
And we'll do that later. We'll talk about that a lot later, but absolutely Waterboy. Like, that's what you think of.
That's it. And it's not, you know, it's not any other movie. Like, you ask anybody around our age or younger, that's going to be the movie that they talk about. Waterboy is probably the largest, quote unquote, representation of Cajun culture that we've gotten for, again, global distribution. I mean, can you think of another movie that's like set in Cajun culture that way that was this sort of global release? I guess it was a blockbuster.
It was pretty popular. I don't know about blockbuster, but it was probably in the top five movies of that, you know, that
everybody era. Knows it.
Yeah. Since I asked you the question earlier, I've been trying to think of a movie that's more popular than that in Cajun culture, and I have yet to come up with any of them, and maybe I'm just missing one. But I mean, what else is there? Yeah, I don't know.
Once you take out New Orleans, because they don't go to New Orleans in Waterboy, because they're filmed in Florida.
Right.
I mean, I can think of some excellent movies. I think you could include like Beast of the Southern Wilds as far as like excellent movies that came in, but that's not a couillon movie. That's an artsy fartsy movie.
Right. And probably not nearly as many people have watched that either, you know?
Oh, nowhere. Everyone I've met has seen The Waterboy. Like, five people I've met have seen Beast of the Southern Wilds if they're not in that sort of like, I like films with complicated plots. Right. Sort of pool of people.
But the plot of Waterboy was very classically done, like as far as the structure of it, which I was very surprised at upon its recent watching. It's like, it's The Fool's Journey by, you know, Joseph Campbell, but like a comedy, and the Waterboy is the main character, which is
it hits all the points. You get the conflict, you get the rise in action. There are some aspects of it that I don't dislike. I'm not a huge Adam Sandler fan to begin with.
Right.
I'm the nerd who doesn't like that sort of screwball comedy from that era. But I can sit there and I can watch it and I can see parts of that that are accurate and that are, I can't pretend, aren't 100% accurate representations of my people.
He's a very likable person in the movie, for sure.
He is. The character as he's portrayed is a dude that I could totally have gone to school with. Like, that's what it comes down to for me.
Sure.
Like, I mean, he talks funny. He doesn't talk like Cajuns, but I know that guy, right? I know that guy. I know that setting. And I think that making it about football, freaking genius. Because nothing turns us into some couillons faster than some football.
That's right.
I feel like the most inaccurate thing was that the mama wasn't into it. Like, every mom I know.
But Kathy Bates, and what a great person to cast as the mama.
Oh, my God. I was rolling watching it, but at the same time, I'm like, no. That's where I disconnect for the water boy for me. It's like,
right.
His mama would have been punching them to let him on the field. Like, that's not how that works.
Well, if we're ever given a sequel to The Waterboy, then Mama's going to be the biggest fan there is, you know.
But. Oh, yeah. Oh, no, with like in her brassiere with her chest painted in the right colors. Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. But I think the thing with The Waterboy and with Bobby Boucher as the couillon and as the fool is that they almost, like you were talking about the classical structure, like it's played as the fool's journey, right? Mm-hmm. And the fool's journey...
Or as the hero's journey, even. Right. Okay, but look,
the fool's journey can be a little bit different because the fool doesn't necessarily have to change.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't really change. The world around him changes for him.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because Bobby is the same at the beginning and the end. And that's like some weird, stupid, so you like Joseph Campbell, keep going down the rabbit hole thing. Like, there's definitely, there's also like the heroine's journey. Like, I vibe on this crap. Bobby doesn't really have to change for the movie. Like, he's fine from the way it is.
The world does change around him. That's a good point.
But that shows the strength of the couillon. That shows the strength of the fool. Mm-hmm. That shows that he is fine the way that he is. And I think that that's kind of one of the things with Cajun culture specifically is, for the most part, if you take out a lot of external forces that exist in our culture just because we are a people who live in the 21st century with the problematic things that are happening in the world today, you know, that innocence is not something that we try to shed as a culture. Like, we're not trying to not be couillons. We're not trying to not be fools. There isn't really like this sort of cultural drive to shed the idiot. We hold these people up in our culture. You know, we hold up the foolish. We hold up the silliness. We hold up. I have a friend of mine, well, an acquaintance. And one of the best things I can say about him is that he's too stupid to be a bad guy.
Hmm.
Like, he's sweet. He's nice. And he literally, he did some dumb things in his youth. Right? We all do. Mm-hmm. But when it comes down to it, he's literally an innocent soul. And he is one of the best people we know. And if you look in your life, especially in Cajun culture, I think that when we see those people who are kind of effortless couillons, right? Like, they get screwed over sometimes, but they mostly just want to like live and let live. And like, those are people that we really value in our culture. That once you push that hustle culture, that rat race, that kind of, to me at least, feels external to us as a people, right? Like, capitalism is something that Cajuns didn't really get to until recently.
Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, we were just trying to survive at many points of our ancestry, you know?
I mean, until they introduced property tax, we were a barter society, you know?
Yeah, like,
we
were you could a barter trade anything economy. You could trade a bushel of shrimp for whatever, some work on your house or whatever, right? Very much so. Oh. Yeah, you're right.
So you can't... I'd be totally willing to take some shrimp for a painting. Just putting that out there. Anybody who's local who wants a painting, I will work for shrimp. But especially the prices these days, I could get a lot of shrimp for a painting.
Right.
But it's sad the price is that low. But that sort of hustle culture, that strive for quote-unquote self-improvement and stuff, that is almost dominant in the monoculture of America these days, is something that you don't really have to cultivate down here. You can make a living if you completely fine just going off in your boat and coming home and just eating what you catch. Like, that can be a year-round survival for a lot of people down here, and it is. Yeah. It still is. And I think that being that sort of couillon, right? Like, a person, anybody outside of Cajun culture would be like, oh, look at him. He could go have a job. He could go and hustle. He could go make $60,000 a year and then retire. And then what's he going to want to do when he retires? Sit on his boat, go fishing, bring it home and eat it. If that bounty is available to us, then why put all this blood, sweat, and tears? You know, it
do that the whole time, right?
Yeah. It comes back around to that idea of people outside of Cajun culture thinking that we're ignorant when really I think we got it figured out.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, thinking that there's an ignorance to that closeness to the land when the joke's on them, like, no, buddy, like, we've got it good, and you feeling bad for us is the joke. Me being ignorant isn't the joke. it's you thinking that I'm ignorant in this moment is the joke.
Right. Yeah. That's an interesting way to put it for sure. And I think there's a lot to that. You got me thinking now.
Whenever you can live in a place that takes care of all of your needs, what do you have to worry about? Be a fool. Be a couillon.
Yeah.
Let yourself roll in the sand and go fishing all day because you can. That's an option down here.
Mm-hmm. If everybody did that, could the land sustain itself? So no, let's be the couillons and let everybody, like you said, let everybody else figure their own thing out.
So when you talk about that, like, classical fool, you know, you're talking about this journey that we're almost talking about with the tarot card, right? You talked about that earlier, that the fool or the couillon as this sort of archetypal character.
One of 22 major arcana, right? The fool is either one or the last, right?
It's zero in most of the decks that I know, but at this point, there are so many tarot decks. And let's face it, they're tarot decks. Like, you got all the wiggle room you want, honey.
Mm-hmm.
It's an art, not a science.
Yeah.
And for the fool, it's that young person kind of going out into this world. It's a young person stepping out ready to make mistakes and being vulnerable to screwing up and maybe not making the best choices.
I think it's interesting, though, that it could be either the first card or the last card, in that the last card, if you're too foolish, it could be your end as well, right? So,
yeah.
I don't know. It's just an interesting way to position the fool, right? I like to see him at the beginning, he or she at the beginning, the fool, because, you know, it is that new discovery of everything, right? Everything's new and everything's, you know, you got to discover all the other stages of life after that, or not.
I was talking to my cousin and he was talking about the couillon in the concept and the concept of the fool and kind of correlating the two. We were talking about whether the couillon would be stepping onto or off of the shrimp boat.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really funny because my cousin's always lived down here. Like he moved to Houston for a little while, but he's basically been in cut off most of his life. And this kid is brilliant. And his idea of the couillon was stepping off of the shrimp boat, like leaving that lifestyle and going out into the world. Mm-hmm. Right. So like the idea of the couillon leaving the bayou life and then going out to experience the world, which is kind of interesting because through tarot, we know that he's eventually going to come back. Right. Like through that fool's journey, through all of that, we know that he may be going out into the world to learn about it. But for the journey to be complete, he has to come back. And then for me, whenever we were pitching, you know, these ideas around, my idea was that he was going onto the shrimp boat. But the idea of like the boat is taking you out into the world. And it just, we just kind of had this, one of those conversations where neither of us was right or wrong. It was just kind of the perspective of it.
Right. And that said, I like the ambiguity of he having one foot on the dock and one foot on the boat, and the viewer decides which one is
which way is he going?
Destiny, yeah.
I mean, when we were coming up, everyone was, you know, leave the bayou, go to college, go to college. Leave the bayou, leave the bayou, go to college. Go make something of yourself somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they forgot the part where it's the come back.
Right.
You know, it's that aspect of it has, I won't say completely fallen away, but Cajun culture is one of the places where we don't leave very often.
Mm-hmm.
And when we do, a lot of people our age just stayed gone.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of, you know, I am the only person in my family who's left for more than 5 years. And I've been gone now for 14 years. And it's... Mm-hmm. You know, and I love going back, and I you know, I'm trying to live that dual life of ultimately of living, you know, where my wife's family lives and where my family lives, and trying to make that work. And you know, I love the Bayou region. It's a great region. And you know, even in the writing I'm doing, it's all about Riker, my main character, finding his way back to the Bayou from his journey. You know, and I.
Yeah.
It's an interesting kind of dichotomy there of, you know, leaving and then coming back, though.
It's been interesting for me as, you know, I was gone for about 20-ish years, 17 to 20 years. Just, I bounced back a few times, but I was definitely off the bayou for more of that 20 years than not. Coming back, you kind of I've had to make myself the couillon. Like, I've had to admit that because I was gone for so long, and from the time that I was so young, there's a lot of stuff down here I don't know. So... Yeah. Approaching my own culture as the couillon, as like, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know where that festival is. I don't know, like, I guess kind of owning your ignorance. Mm-hmm. Seems like something that's a very definitely in tarot and in culture. Like, if you just own your ignorance, then you're a couillon for good, right? You don't pretend, you don't get fun chalk, right? You don't pretend that you're not an ignorant person. And I think that's where one of the strengths of the fool and the strengths of the couillon come through, is that it's unapologetic.
Perpetually experiencing the unknown and embracing that and learning from it, right?
And that's absolutely what the fool means in tarot. And I think that that's also what this sort of archetype exists. Like, it sits so firmly in that place in Cajun lore and Cajun stories, and it's so strong. I mean, you look at the most prevalent jokes, the most well-known jokes, the most globally known jokes in Cajun culture come from the fool, and they come from Bujo and Thibodeau.
That's right.
You know, Bujo and Thibodeau jokes are, that's what everybody knows. You know, those are the ones that absolutely everyone knows a few Bujo and Thibodeau jokes, knows a couple of stories where, you know, Bujo is sleeping with Thibodeau's wife, or somebody's cutting down the wrong plant. Do you know any? Do you have a favorite Bujo and Thibodeau joke?
I've heard a few, and my thing is, I'm not great at like remembering jokes, but I do. But I try.
Do you have any written down you want to try?
I don't. Let me just think about that for a little while. Do you have any that you want to get out?
I can read some. Okay, so Bujo and Thibodeau go to the unemployment office. Bujo is the first one called, and he goes to the desk, and the lady asks, what employment skills do you have? And Bujo looks confused. He says, may what you mean? And the lady says, well, what did you do at your last job? Me Shao was a pilot. Oh, we have several openings for pilots. Please fill this out. And she sends him to the counter with a pen and paper. And then they call up Thibodeau. Sir, what did you do in your last job? Made me, I cut some sugar cane. Well, do you have any other skills? No, I just cut sugar cane. Well, we don't have any jobs available for you now. And Thibodeau looks at her really confused. He says, may I don't understand. Why don't you just give me one of them jobs like you just gave Boudreaux? She says, well, he has a job that's in demand. He's a pilot. Well, he can't really pilot till I cut it.
That's ridiculous.
Let's see. There's usually some about, there's usually one about like they cheating on their wives.
Yeah.
There's always somebody screwing around somebody else's wife or hiding in the duck blinds.
Yeah. Speaking of wives, I just remembered one that I heard. Boudreaux came up to Thibodeau, and Thibodeau was kind of hanging his head, and Boudreaux said, man, what's wrong, Thibodeau? He said, well, I just lost my wife, he said. And Bujo said, well, how'd you lose your wife? He said, and Thibodeau said, well, you know, I don't know, but I found her. She's floating face down in the swamp. And he said, oh, that's horrible, Thibodeau. He said, yeah, but there's good news and bad news. He said, the bad news is I found her floating, you know, head down in the marsh. And the good news, though, is she had 6 crabs on her, and we're going to check her again tomorrow. It was something like that. And to be fair, somebody from the Northeast told me that joke while I was in Austin, and I was like, dude, that's a funny joke.
That's dark and gross.
Dark and gross, yeah.
Here's one that feels cuts a little close to home. So Bujo and Thibodeau, they out camping. They out in the marsh, they pitch their tent, they staying overnight. They're not even at the camp, they just camping out in the woods. They got their tent set up. They fell sound asleep. A couple hours later, Thibodeau woke Bujo up and says, Misha, look at the sky, what you see? And Bujo says, I see millions of stars. And says, what that tells you? Asked Thibodeau. And Bujo stopped for a minute and he said, well, astronomically speaking, it tells me there are millions of galaxies and potentially billions of planets. Astrologically, it tells me that Saturn is in Leo. Time-wise, it appears to be approximately 3:15 in the morning. Theologically, Mother Nature is all-powerful and we're small and insignificant. Meteorologically, it seems that we'll have a beautiful day tomorrow. What's it tell you, Thibodeau? And Thibodeau says, Boudreau, you dumber than it means somebody stole the tent.
Oh, man. I love all those different assessments.
Shout out to some person that I met in a bar about 10 years ago told me that one.
That's pretty good. That, especially for being told in a bar. I don't think, yeah.
Well, I wrote it down. I wrote it down and I cross-referenced it a little bit, but it was like, I was like, yeah. What was that one? He just lists like all this stuff about the weather. And
that is great. Yeah.
And look, the guy who told it to me, that was about three times as long. But you know, it's really funny. I was researching, not like the history of Boudreaux and Thibodeau jokes, but in that vein, from what I understand, there's like almost all the same jokes are told up north in like Midwestern culture, but it's Sven and Ollie.
I've heard about this. Yeah.
Like Boudreaux and Thibodeau or Sven and Ollie are like, usually they just change out the names and a little bit of the setting and the accent, of course. Those characters are, I guess, kind of swappable with the fools that exist in other cultures. And it's always like one of them knows more than the other one. So it even comes back to like Boudreaux or Thibodeau's going to let Boudreaux go. I don't think there's really a specific, like one isn't a specific character. Like they're just a pair of fools. But one's going to let the other one get just enough rope to hang himself with, like, every time. Like, he's just going to let him go on. Or like, yeah, you a coon ass, you a couillon, you an idiot. Mm-hmm. But I think that it also comes down to, again, this is the side of Cajun culture that it is universal, right? It's one of those things that it's so specific to us. It's so unique to Cajun culture, but at the same time, it is something that we share with a lot of people in some capacity. You know, is that appreciation for the silliness and for the foolish. I really think that the reason that the Boudreaux and Thibodeau jokes are so popular and that they have been so widespread is because being that sort of beautiful ignorance and not running away from our ignorance is the way that Cajuns have learned to survive in this world. We can't pretend that we were a literate society. We can't pretend that we had this complicated urban development in our culture. We've always been a rural culture. We've always been an agrarian culture. And I think that just kind of owning that ignorance and being like, yeah, I don't know how to build a, you know, high-rise complex, that doesn't make you better than me. That just means I don't know it, but right. I can learn. And I think that that openness to learning and that adaptability of the fool and that adaptability of the couillon and that openness and acceptance of our own ignorance in a lot of fields, but also always knowing that we actually know what's important and we actually know what's up and we actually, deep in our bones, know that where we are is good and that we have enough and that we are enough. I think that's a very fundamental part of Cajun culture, and it's definitely why the couillon feels like almost like the fundamental character in Cajun lore. So what you've been up to lately? Tell me about the book launched and it's going. How's that?
Yeah, it's going well. So yeah, well, we launched our book back in December. Book one of Creatures of Conquest, Legend of the Bayou Bengal. So that's just the first in a series of four. Right now we're writing book two, as well as our first backstory for our Irish character, which is a lot of fun because we get to explore some 1700s Ireland for the Irish character, and for book two I get to dive deep into some 1830s Cajun culture right after the founding of Terrebonne Parish in 1822. And so it's fun. I'm still reading a lot.
If our history teachers could see us now.
I know, right? Oh man, history and mythology meet. Yeah. It's a lot of fun, but yeah, that's what I've been doing. How about yourself?
So I'm not going to be doing the Frenchman markets going forward. I'm going to be kind of sticking close to home and just doubling down on getting some projects out, working on a few commissions, and trying to be a little more present with the podcast. I'm really enjoying doing this. But yeah, just kind of recalibrating my career to being at home, trying to do more of the social media things. I literally do like at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm trying to post every day at 2 o'clock. Like coffee break, like just whatever's on the desk. I've stopped overthinking social media and that's just whatever cool. The heck is in front of me at 2 p.m. That's what gets posted to Instagram and YouTube shorts.
That's awesome. I need to do something like that too. You're inspiring me to do the same thing because, yeah, I don't.
It's exhausting. Social media is utterly exhausting.
It is, right?
Well, that's a wrap on our Couillon episode. And to all my Couillons out there, we love y'all. And to every listener we've got, serious or silly, to all the new people who are listening every week, we appreciate every single one of you. And please remember, Outlandish Parish is a free podcast, and it will always be a free podcast. But if you want to show us some love, if you want to help us out, or even if you just want to learn a little bit more about us, about our topics, about our resources, you can always go to outlandishparish.com to check out the website where you can link to Jonas and I's work, find out more about what we're doing. You can find us on Facebook at the Outlandish Parish Parishioners Hall. And you can also find us on Instagram at Outlandish Parish. We are always making new episodes, and we are really dedicated to the work that we're doing. If you have a topic you'd like us to cover, shoot us an email. Our email address is outlandishparish@gmail.com. Word of mouth is the best way to help. So if you like what we're doing, if you've got a partner who you think might like what we're doing, you got a couple of couillons in your family that you think might like to give a listen to what Jonas and I are trying to do, then go ahead and share the podcast out. Let us know what you're doing. Leave us a review. Leave us a couple of stars. We appreciate every single one of you, and we'll see you soon in Outlandish Parish.